It's Newcastle's Hit 106.9 with Nick, Jess and Ducko. Now, our next guest, he is the author of The Wealth Wizard, The Yellow Brick Road to Your Financial Security and What It Takes. He knows a lot about finance and a lot about business, an area where we collectively do not know much about, guys.
No.
We outsource our knowledge in this field, which I think is a very smart move by us.
Yeah, absolutely. So he joins us now, Mr. Mark Boris. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How are you going?
Excellent. Thank you. Now, the reason why we want to speak to you is because, well, there's a bunch of stuff that's happening that's pretty confusing at the moment for Australia and the world. And the first thing I think to drill down on is the JobKeeper payments. So, to start with, so many questions here. Who is eligible? And is it true that some people are getting pay rises as a result of this?
Well, that could be the case, but it's not what it's designed for. So, to answer your question, who is eligible? It is businesses are eligible for the payment. So it's not for the employee. It is for the business. So the business itself is eligible. And now the business, to be eligible, must have a drop in its income of around 30%, or its foreseeable income of around 30%. In other words, what they budget to happen in the next quarter. So if your business is still making the same amount of money as it always made, then forget it. You're not entitled to it, okay? Hmm. But you are entitled to the JobKeeper payment of $1,500 a fortnight per employee to the extent that your business is down by 30%. Now, that amount of money is only available based on certain tests. And those tests means the money can only be used to pay employees who are earning a minimum of $750 a week, $1,500 a fortnight. That's one. Two, they must be Australian citizens. So you can't give it to the senator, your uncle, your auntie who's living in wherever they're living in some other country not as a citizen. It's only available full-time employees and part-time employees who were employed as at 1 March. In other words, you can't go and find some random employee, start employing them now and hope to get the money so you can give it to them. It's got to be there. It's got to be on your books at 1 March. And or casual employees who have been with you for a 12-month period.
Right. And so the people who are working for companies that are 100% foreign-owned, I've heard in the last week that they're no longer eligible. Is that right?
I don't know the answer to that one. That's a technical one. So if a company is foreign-owned, it sort of makes sense that the company will not be entitled to the JobKeeper program. But it's really, to be honest, maybe not. I'd have to look. Yeah, that's something you need to check. But it doesn't make sense in some respects because the objective here is if there is an Australian company, even though it might be owned by foreigners, if they are employing Australian employees, then the objective is to keep those employees engaged and not on the job seeker line. Mm. So keep them in the job keeper line as opposed to having to go out and line up outside the CES or whatever they call it these days.
Yeah.
As a job seeker. So the game that's a tricky one. I don't know the answer to that one.
Mm, thank you for clearing some of that stuff up, Mark. I know I've had people ask me like, "Hey, can you clarify with the JobKeeper?" I don't know why they're asking me. is it a top up thing from the government? So I'll still get my sort of minimum wage from my company and this extra $750 sort of bonus from the government. And I think people hearing the word stimulus and bonus, these sort of things and going, oh, great, it's an extra injection into my life so I can keep supporting the economy and keep my, lifestyle similar. But it's not a bonus.
It goes to the company. Now, I'll give you two different examples. The first example could be the company's had to close its doors because it's a restaurant and can no longer, can't operate for whatever the legal reasons are. So, but it might have 10 employees and let's assume those employees are either full-time, part-time, or been casual for 12 months. Let's assume they were employed as at 1 March, but you've had to put them off. In other words, you can't pay them because you're not making any money in the restaurant. As long as you start paying those employees a minimum, you, the employer, start paying those employees a minimum of $750 a week or $1,500 a fortnight, as long as you're doing that, then at the end of each month, after you've paid your two payments of $1,500 a fortnight for the month, in other words, $3,000 for the month, at the end of the month, the beginning of the next month, the government will reimburse you that $1,500, whether they're working or not, as long as you're paying them. Now, let's reverse it. Let's say you are still in business. You haven't had to lock up your business, but your revenue is down by 30% or more. If you are paying for every single employee that you pay that's a part-time, full-time, or casual employment as of March 1, if you're paying them $1,500 a fortnight, you will get that. The government will pay you, the employer, $1,500 as sort of like a stimulus thing to help you stay in business because you're doing the right thing, paying your employees, even though your revenue's down by 30%.
Yeah.
Right.
And what about for the business owner, Mark?
The business owner, he doesn't get anything.
He doesn't get anything.
Well, let me put it to you like this. Every business is either run by a company or a trust or in partnership. And let's assume the business owner themselves can, the owner of the business can get one payment. So let's say I'm a plumber and I employ one person and I'm in partnership in the plumbing business, me and my wife. The government says you can have the $1,500 a fortnight for that one employee, assuming your revenue is down by 30%, but you can have your $1,500 for that one employee, plus we'll give you another $1,500 a fortnight for either you or your wife.
Right.
I was going to say, because, you know, I might own a cafe and, yeah, I'm looking after my staff, but I've still got to eat.
Exactly.
I still have to put food on the table for my family. Who's helping
only
me?
Only available for one owner. So you might be in partnership with your best mate down the road or your girlfriend. You're only going to get $1,500 for one of you.
Right, so it's like for the whole business, essentially, gets that $1,500.
Yeah. But that's two mouths to put food in.
Yeah.
That's
it's
weird.
Tough.
But it's better than a poker in the eye with a sharp stick, though, I guess.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's a little bit better than that, I guess. And on the other side, of the coin, Mark, it might be a tough one to answer, but we are spending so much money now with these handouts. How do we pay this back? How long does it take? You know what I mean? Can we come back from this?
Well, the government has to borrow the money. You know, because there's not enough money coming out of consolidated revenue. In other words, the taxes the government raises. There's not enough money coming out from the taxes to fund this. So the government has to go and borrow the money. And fortunately, our government is in very good shape. Our country, our nation is in very good shape. And we have great credit rating as a nation. So we can borrow the money. But, you know, it's borrowing. So like everybody, if you borrow money, you've got to pay it back at some stage. So the question that you're asking is, how do we pay it back? There's only two ways governments raise money. They either borrow money, which you can't borrow money to repay money, so that's not going to happen. And the only other way is you're going to earn it. Now, the way the government earns it is by taxes. So the question becomes then, how does a government get enough tax to repay the money we just borrowed to stump up all these companies and all the various things the government's done recently? Well, the only way you can do that is you either increase the taxes over time to raise enough money to not only pay for what happens day to day in this country, but to also pay back the debt, or you stimulate the country enough such that everyone in this country earns much more money than we were earning and keep the taxes at the same rate, but nonetheless earning more tax than we would ordinarily earn. So the current government, the coalition, their objective will be to stimulate the economy enough such that they don't have to raise taxes. But the question becomes, can they succeed? Are they going to be successful in that? And the big issue right now, for me anyway, right, and I've been banging on about this, the big issue right now is, unfortunately, the federal government doesn't control that stuff. That's controlled by the state governments. The state governments are the ones who relax the rules, not the federal government. And the state governments don't really care that much about how much money the country earns, how much taxes the federal government raises. The state governments are more interested in sort of the health of the nation and, you know, whether or not we've got 10 COVIDs or 1,000 COVIDs. So there's a bit of a disconnect between the federal and the state governments. And each state, by the way, is running their own show. Mm. So they're all doing something different. So this will be a bone of contention now between federal and state relations for the foreseeable future, I think. On one hand, they've been brought together. And they've been brought together closely in order to defeat the COVID or to reduce the curve or flatten the curve, as they're continually telling us about. But now they're going to be at a different position because the states aren't all that interested in how much money they raise from taxes, because this is a federal government debt, not a state government debt. So it's going to be a big issue. I mean, I don't think the state governments are responding at a fast enough rate to what the federal government wants.
Yeah, right. Okay. And so who are we borrowing the money off? I doubt Scott Morrison's like popping into CommBank and, hey, could I grab $362 billion, please?
Jacinda.
No. What the governments do is they issue government bonds. So a bond is basically a promise to pay, and it's an instrument where federal governments and state governments do it too, but the federal government offers bonds to the marketplace, whoever in the marketplace, usually professional investors, who would like to lend us, the government, a bond, and let's say the bond is $500,000 each. You know, you could be a professional investor, or you could be running some super big super fund like an Australian Super or the Public Service Super or the Military Fund or one of those big funds, one of the big trade union funds. Would you like to invest some of the cash that you've got into government bonds? We'll pay you a return. We'll pay you, you know, 1.5% per annum. And by the way, it's government debt, so, you know, it's AAA rated debt. So we, you know, we the government guarantee that bond. So we guarantee we will repay you. So that's pretty good. It's pretty good. What they call debt instruments, a pretty good product, and they offer this worldwide. So they just don't offer to Australian investors. They offer to investors in America or Europe or wherever. And people around the world love investing in Australia because it's a stable country. It's got a AAA rating, one of the highest rated countries in the world when it comes to credit rating. It's basically a good place to invest. So they would probably got flooded with investors trying to buy those bonds, and our government can raise money quite quickly, relatively speaking.
Mark, we've talked a bit amongst ourselves about what we think the world is going to look like post-corona. From a business point of view, what do you think? What do you foresee in, you know, 12, 24 months' time?
I see a change in the way we do business. I think there'll be structural change. I think a lot of the changes we made about in terms of the way we go about business are here to stay for good. Maybe not necessarily in their extreme mode, but in some sort of hybrid mode of what we're currently doing. So I see, businesses with, you know, 20 employees maybe breaking down to two teams of 10, and 10 employees coming this week and 10 employees coming next week, and the other ones go home for the week, and we continue to use Zoom or Skype.
Oh, a lot more working from home.
Yeah, I think so. I think I think what's going to drive businesses in not just here but across the globe. I think one of the big drivers is of businesses going forward is how do I save money running my business?
Yeah.
If I've got two teams, that means I only need half the floor space.
Yeah.
If I've been able to downsize and make it through this period, do I need to bring it all back, sort of thing?
Correct.
Yeah.
So we'll review two things. We'll review the amount of floor space we need. And that's it. That's a direct function of the number of people we employ. So let's say I decide to employ less. I can't employ less people. I've got to employ the same amount of people. Well, another way of reducing the floor space is have less people in at any one time.
Mm.
Have the same amount of people in gross numbers, but in net terms on any one particular day, have less people. The only way I can do that is use digital mediums, which, by the way, we've now been forced to do, and we now know work. And some people love it. Some people love working from home. Some people would like to work from home for a week but come to work for a week where they can go across the road and get a cup of coffee and talk to the business colleagues, have meetings, and then go
online
back to
online gym
meetings.
Classes and stuff. Yeah. I mean, it'll probably change that space. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. So I think there'll be a structural change. But I think the thing that's going to drive the structural change is going to be the pursuit of reducing cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So another outcome of all this will not only be floor space, but another outcome of all this will be, I think, unfortunately, will be the number of people I employ at any one time. So I think what a lot of people have realised is that luxury of having someone perhaps do the running around for you when you can actually do it yourself, that luxury might end up putting that person in the unemployed line.
Yeah.
I think our historical unemployment number, when I say historically, our unemployment number that we've been enjoying in this country for the last, say, 10 years is around somewhere between 4.7% and 5.5% unemployed of the total population of employed people, which is about 12 million employed people in this country. I think what's going to happen outside of the public service, but in private enterprise, I think that we're going to see a higher number of unemployed number. So I'd say we're going to see something between, when everything settles down, somewhere between 6.5% unemployed. That's another 20% of the total number of people employed, unemployed, increased by 20%. Then that would be around, so if we've got $12 million people employed, 10% is 1.2, 600,000 is permanently unemployed. So add another 120,000 people to that.
Jeez.
Right.
Grim.
And
well, it's grim, but it's not grim because I think on top of that, I think government's going to have to start to say, okay, well, we're going to have to change the job seeker program.
Yeah.
You know, like right now, I think there'll be a permanent change to that number. It's not going to be, it was 550 a week, it's now gone to another $500 a week, so it's $1,100 a week. I think somewhere between 550 and 1,100 will become the permanent job seeker payment. But I think you'll see new conditions along job seekers. So if you're just a bludger that's doing their best to not work, you might get 550. If you're an active job seeker, you might get somewhere between 550 and 1100. So there'll be lots of structural change out of all this, hopefully for a positive way. Mm. Maybe they'll say if you're a proper job seeker, you know, we'll give you education program. We'll re-educate you, retrain you to become something that's more relevant to business today. You know, you might become a technical expert or something like that. I don't know. But that's what I think is going to happen. I think we're going to see a lot of good stuff out of this. We're going to see a bit of pain in the beginning, though.
Yeah.
And do you think that there are any specific injuries that you foresee as totally disappearing in Australia?
I don't think there'll be anything we'll totally won't see in the future, but I think that there'll be a lot of permanent reduction in some of those businesses that we do see. For example, restaurants and cafes. I just don't see how they're going to be able to survive. Whether they introduce, you know, the reintroduce are allowing you to put everybody inside, because my gut feeling is that state governments are going to impose these 1.5 metre rules for a long time. Because you can't have enough floor space to accommodate 1.5 metres for a restaurant to have enough scale to justify the expense of paying the landlord and paying your staff. And then, you know, like things like Sunday lunchtime, do I have to pay 150% wages, you know, in other words, above the award because it's a Sunday? But if I've got to make everybody in my restaurant sit 1.5 metres apart, I won't have enough volume to justify the 1.5, the loading.
Yeah, I know some local cafes with the restrictions easing this week. You know, 10 people in the cafe. I know some have gone, it's not worth it.
Yeah, because they don't have the floor space or what. And if they're working, not working completely, but if people are getting takeaway, what's the point of opening up for 10 people?
Absolutely.
Or what's the point of opening up altogether again with this 1.5 floor space?
Well, what it's done is it's got a lot of proprietors actually thinking about how their business runs, actually doing an examination, like doing a top-down look at their business and a bottom-up sort of scrape through, you know, and sort of say, well, you know, right now, during the COVID period, me, my business partner and one other person, we did all the work. We just did takeaway coffees. We didn't open up for, like, the restaurant part. Really, we just need a real hole in the wall where we can actually, make some products, send it out the door and make coffees and send them out the door and keep my wages low. Mm. I mean, I think that that'll be the permanent changes. But we'll still get coffee, you know what I mean? I don't see that going, but there'll be permanent changes. Like movie theatres, I mean, I don't know, how the hell are movie theatres going to change?
Yeah.
Like, what do you have? People two abreast, like, what is that? That doesn't make sense either.
Yeah, water bubbler manufacturers, I reckon they're in strife.
Oh, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And monkey bar manufacturers. Too.
Monkey bar.
Yeah, true. Mark Boris, he's a businessman and you're the author of Wealth Wizard as well as The Yellow Brick Road to Your Financial Security. Thank you so much for coming on and clarifying some of that stuff. It's very insightful.
You're welcome. Have a good day.